We'll call the meeting to order. There is a quorum. Members, first of all, I'd just like to say welcome back, right? Welcome back. I don't. Thank you. Thank you. Happy New Year to all of you as well. Today, I'd like to start off by, first of all, thanking Ms. Joan Harmon. I was hoping she was going to be able to be here today. Joni has taken a position elsewhere. And if you ever see Mr. John Appitz, let's give him a little bit of grief on my behalf, if you would, please, for hiring away Joni. Now, we wish him all, wish him well. I'd like to do a brief introduction to Ms. Abigail Johnson. I want to thank her for taking the new position as the CA. And Abigail, if you could just give us a brief overview on who you are and the fact that you came from the great state of Iowa would be wonderful.
That's actually why I was required to take this job, is I'm the only one on staff from Iowa, but we got to work with a great chair, so it was a good idea. So my grandparents, who are Illinois farmers, are very, very proud that I get to be a part of this committee, and I'm very proud as well, so thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you, Abigail. I'd also want to welcome back, of course, Linda Westrom, the CLA, Adam Kephart, researcher for the GOP, Nancy Conley for the Dems, and I was telling Nancy that we have pictures of her polar plunge that's going up first when we get the committee going. I'm just teasing. Welcome back as well. Mr. Sullivan, Colby Sullivan, and Mr. Ryan Holtz, we appreciate your contribution to the committees as well. And welcome back, Arlen. Arlen is our page for this committee. We are very fortunate to have you as well. So welcome back. We do have some minutes here, members. What are they dated here? May 11th, 2011. Do we have someone to move the minutes?
Mr. Chairman, I'll move the minutes from the May 11th meeting.
All right. Thank you, Representative. We do have any discussion on that? Representative Szymanski moves the minutes. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Members, we're going to jump right into the agenda. Representative Szymanski, if you'd like to move up front there. Yes, Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As Representative Szymanski is getting ready, just wondering if you have a little roadmap of what can happen here, or kind of your goals in the next few weeks. I think members had some days were off, some days were on. Maybe just for planning purposes, if
yes.
You could help us out with that.
Yes, very nice. Thank you. Yes, members, we were not going to meet this week, and I thank everybody for the flexibility and being able to accommodate today. We did have some members from greater states traveling a great distance to come in and testify in front of the Senate. And so we just wanted to be courteous to them and their time, and that's why we did put this together as well. I met with the department this morning, talking about some of the governor's initiatives and the department bills as well. We are, of course, doing some policy bill. There's going to be language, some flood language also, going to be doing that. We will make sure that everybody is updated on that. The governor had a few other initiatives as well. We want to make sure they have the time to get that language to us. We are, we'll let you know as soon as possible. We'll probably be meeting, last year we didn't meet all 3 days. We'll let you know if we're going to do that, if we're going to use those. I mean, if we get all these bills to us in a very timely fashion, maybe we can do that to get our work done here, and that way you can have time to focus on the other committees. But we'll do our best to keep you updated, Representative Hansen. I appreciate that. So, okay. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a little thought. We don't know deadlines yet or anything like that, correct?
That is correct. And we'll let you know those as well. Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Any other questions before we get started?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Mile.
No, on that. When is our next meeting?
Our next meeting will be next Tuesday. Our next Ag Committee meeting? Is that what you're asking?
Yes. Okay.
And you looked a little puzzled. Is there?
That's good. That's good.
Okay. All right. Very well. Any other questions? So, Representative Swazinski, we wanted to hear your bill today. Of course, it did not meet deadlines, and so it's informational only here today, and we'll be voting on this. The plan is to vote on this next Tuesday.
Yep.
All right. So with that, to your language, if
all
you would,
right.
please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What we have before you has no House file, but it is essentially a kind of a temporary fix bill to kind of get rules in place in the state of Minnesota for certification for GMPs, which is good manufacturing practices for our commercial feed industry here in the state. The feds have not taken action yet as far as their rulemaking authority at the federal level. This bill kind of lays out the processes that will hopefully mirror what that will potentially be so that we can go ahead with some of our feed industry for the certification here in the state that authorizes the Minnesota Department of Agriculture to do inspections at the manufacturer's request, voluntary, and sets out those rules in order to meet those regulations until the time of until the feds make up their rules, and then we will automatically adopt those rules whenever that does happen. So if you want to just take a look at it, so currently the Minnesota Department of Agriculture doesn't necessarily have authorization to do this, so this opens up the ability for some of our manufacturers here in our state to gain some competitive advantage to export products that they currently have orders for. And so we've got Valco Nutrition here is represented at the table. These folks manufacture feed in Minnesota, Iowa, across the Midwest, and this will also affect other businesses in Eden Prairie and that has another business there, and also up in Northfield where there's another manufacturer as well. So this really kind of lays out what the process is going to be as far as what the MDA will be looking for when they come into the door. It just sets out the certificate so that it can be awarded to manufacturers. So okay. With that, I'd like to ask Matt Frederking from Ralco Nutrition. He's the Director of Regulatory Affairs and Operations for Ralco Nutrition, and he's actually pretty smart guy, and he really has led kind of the country with some of these issues, and he's a great asset to our state. So,
thank you. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, and proceed.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, committee, great to be here. Matt Frederking, Director of Regulatory Affairs and Operations with Ralco Nutrition, based out of Marshall, Minnesota. We came to the department along with the Senate and the House about 30 to 45 days ago, asking for this request. We came on behalf of the industry along with our own organization. Chris ran through a lot of the information that revolves around good manufacturing practices certificates. We had the country of Brazil back in 2010 put in place a barrier for us to be able to import our products, and one of those was getting a certificate of good manufacturing practices from a state or federal agency. A lot of the products that we move into that environment and global marketplace are not medicated feed additives. And so at the federal level, prior to 2011, they would issue these documents. But with the passage of the Food Safety Modernization Act on January 4th of 2011, the federal government postponed issuing these certificates until they could finalize their federal regulation and laws. Those are to go into effect this summer, but as we know at the federal level, things can get held up and may not be issued. And so the industry as a whole was looking for the state of Minnesota to help us create an avenue in which we could export our products, specifically in this case to Brazil. But there are other countries that are following suit requiring the same certification. And so Ralco Nutrition has about 120 employees based out of our main offices in Marshall. And we export to currently roughly 20 countries at this point in time. But there are areas in the world that due to the certification limits our products cannot get out, and so we would ask the committee to at least consider the bill and look at the language that's in there, and hopefully we can gain your support to export our products.
Any questions for the testifiers? Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair, and thanks for bringing this bill forward. Just a couple questions to the testifier. Just concerned about, would this add increased cost to your process of manufacturing? And what about if you manufactured multi-states? Would it be a problem with regulations different in different states?
Mr. Fredericking.
What is being handled at this point in time in regards to the other 50 states in the country? We have roughly 10 states in the U.S. that are going through a process such as we're presenting to you today. There is still a lot of work to be done in other states. For instance, we will be headed south to the great state of Iowa to begin some sort of a process as this as well. But yes, to your point, if your manufacturing facility is outside of the state of Minnesota, this will not give them the authority to issue the certificate. For us, as far as Ralco, our manufacturing facilities are in Marshall, Minnesota, and so for us, it does give us that ability, along with the other manufacturers in Minnesota. However, any other manufacturing facilities that you may have around the country, state laws are having to be adjusted so that they can issue these certificates as well. For instance, in Missouri and Kansas, they will issue a document such as this. The state of Indiana is doing it. And so from an industry perspective, there's still a lot of work to be done, but we wanted to start at home first and go from there. Can you repeat your second question?
Representative Anderson.
Thanks again, Mr. Chair. No, just asking if this would increase your manufacturing cost.
Yes.
Mr. Frederick.
From the cost perspective, there will be a financial cost to the organization to have the state come in and do the inspections. However, by opening up the export market, those dollars are available to fund those inspections.
Representative Anderson, follow up. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have two questions. I appreciate the emphasis on quality and its recognition that quality adds to exportability for Minnesota products, and that we can validate quality that helps overall. You referenced medicated feeds, and my first question relates to the medicated feed system with drugs being added to feeds. That is covered under statutory. This has nothing to do with that. The existing laws and regulations at the state and federal level apply. Is that correct?
Correct.
And Mr. Fredericking? All right. Representative Hansen.
Okay. And then secondly, so it looks like we have a certification process where a business may apply to the commissioner. I'm wondering how this is going to be paid for, who's going to do the work, and what the assurances are that the certificate means anything in terms of ongoing inspection and validation, because I would hope that that if we do a certification, it means something.
Yeah,
that's right. Representative Swazinski, you want to handle that or get someone from the department?
Well, I'd like to ask Greta Gautier to join us here at the front table. Okay. I think naturally, while she's speaking or coming up, when the feds have created rules, there's a natural relationship there between the state and the feds and some negotiation on how those costs will be incurred. But because we're kind of leaping forward, we have some other issues. So,
Ms. Gautier, please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Greta Gautier with the Department of Agriculture, and thank you for having me up to speak to the department's issues and impacts with this bill. I also wondered if we could have Dr. Heidi Katzenberg come up. She is the director of our Dairy and Food Inspection Division, which is the division that would be doing the inspections required to grant a certificate for good manufacturing practices for the non-medicated feed that is headed to Brazil.
Yes. And members, we do have Mr. Zelenka from Minnesota Green and Feed Association lined up to testify, and Dr. Kassenborg, of course, who just moved to the table, and Mr. Reed from the Department of Agriculture also. So maybe if we took testimony, we'd be able to answer many of these questions through the testimony. However, Dr. Kassenborg, would you like to address that question at this point in time, or Ms. Gauthier?
Actually, Mr. Chairman, could you repeat the question, please?
President Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. How are we going to pay for this? Your budget was cut last year. Is this general fund? Is this a new fee? How are we going to pay for this?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Hansen, you're exactly right. This activity of issuing this type of certificate for non-medicated feed is not in our base budget. It is not something that was before you last year when our budget came before the committee. And so, therefore, we would need to charge a fee to cover the costs that we would incur in making these inspections. If you look on page 2 of the bill, on line 2.7, the language here gives the commissioner the authority to assess a fee. And again, these inspections would be voluntary on request. Assess a fee for the inspection, the service, the work performed. And the fee is going to be based on, if you look there on line 2.9, about halfway through, on mileage and our cost of doing this inspection. Since this is something that the department has never done before, so we did our best shot at estimating those costs, but we will be charging a fee and to cover our costs that we incur in making these inspections.
Thank you, Ms. Gauthier. And one of the things that I forgot to do opening up, I want to thank the entire Ag Committee working in a very bipartisan fashion last year to pass a bill to address this in a very difficult budget year. Bipartisanly and get the only bill that was signed into law by the governor. So thank all of you for that as well. Representative Hansen, follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to ask the industry testifier if they would support the fee in order to have the a fee, whatever it is, or if there's conditions on your support.
Mr. Frederking.
Yes. From an industry perspective, we would look at the fee, and as I stated, if we can open up these export markets, it is not a concern for us from an industry perspective.
Thank you, Mr. Frederick. Representative Hansen, follow-up? Thank you. Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I know you want to get the other testimony, but I just thought I'd follow up to understand the situation before we get the other testifiers. Mr. Frederick, you mentioned the Fed stopped issuing the documents you needed in January of 2011. What have you been doing for the last 13 months?
Mr. Frederking.
We have been working through states to try and adjust these laws and these regulations so that our products can continue to move through the global marketplace. Essentially, when they stopped the issuance of that certificate, trade stopped.
Representative Ma?
Thank you. If I may follow up, Mr. Chair. What's your timeline then? I mean, I assume you'd rather have had this done yesterday as opposed to tomorrow, but what type of timeline are you looking at here?
Mr. Frederking.
For our organization and industry as a whole, as soon as possible would be excellent. However, we have been sitting and somewhat waiting for an extended period of time. And so 60, 90 days, you know, if we can get things rolling by probably May at the latest, that would be excellent. But as soon as possible.
Thank you. Representative Morrow.
If I could have one more follow-up. Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is for Representative Swedzinski. I have a question. You mentioned about this being a temporary fix, and I'm trying to understand, for example, the Feds take action in June, let's say. I know that may be terribly optimistic. Does everything is what we've done for naught? And also, if you could let me know, these are based on, I think, some associations' recommendations of what the process should be. Are other states doing the exact same thing, Missouri and the others, or are they going on different paths?
We'll see what's going on.
Ms. Swedzinski.
Mr. Chair, sorry. So, you know, Brazil, they have asked for a certificate, so they're using it for either two prongs. So either they want a federal or a state certification. And so with the feds not having taken action, and so there's nothing going on, I think the industry has looked at what they're looking for when it comes to creating that certification in the inspection process. If something happens in June or July on the federal level, it's an automatic sunset. And so when I say temporary, I meant it's a sunsetting bill. So our language and our certification, the rules that we set up will simply disappear, and we will adapt what the feds adopt at that time. And so when I meant temporary, I meant sunset in a way. So
thank you. Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to clarify, this is permanent, unless I'm going to use the word preempted, although that may not be the right word, preempted by a federal action.
Sure.
Representative Swazinski?
Mr. Chair, yes.
All right. Thank you. Representative Szymanski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First to Mr. Frederickson. Are you confident that this legislation will satisfy your global customers for their requirements of having this inspection done?
Mr. Frederickson.
Mr. Chairman, we are confident that with the wording that is in the bill, that will meet the global requirements that we have for the current good manufacturing practices documents.
All right. Thank you.
Yes. Representative Szymanski.
If I may ask the department a question.
Yes.
For Ms. Gauthier. In the Department of Ag, do you have an estimate of how many full-time employees you may need to comply with this legislation? And would they be Department of Ag employees, or would you consider hiring contractors to do these inspections?
Very important question. Ms. Gauthier.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Very good question, Representative Szymanski. I'm going to ask Dr. Katzenberg, who is the director of that division, to speak to that question.
Dr. Katzenberg, welcome. Please state your name, who you represent for the record, please.
My name is Dr. Heidi Katzenberg. I'm the division director for the Dairy and Food Inspection Division at the Minnesota Department of Agriculture.
Welcome back to the committee.
Thank you. Mr. Speaker, representative.
Please, don't give me a demotion.
Oops. Sorry.
Oh, no.
Mr. Chair.
I'm just teasing.
Yeah. Okay, we'll begin again.
Dr. Kastenberg.
To your question about costs and how we would cover that, since this is a little bit of an unknown yet, how many will actually be requested, we've done a few figures, and we expect probably about 12, based upon our estimates over the last couple of years, about similar types of certificates for other similar things and exports. And so we would not be hiring additional staff at this point. So we would see how it goes. We may not, in the future, we may have to add additional staff to do that, depending upon demand and depending upon the requirements for the federal, which shouldn't be too different than our own laws that we're attempting to pass now. One point about the federal Food Safety Modernization Act and to the kind of goes into that as far as the third-party auditors and having contractors do that. I don't know if you've seen, there's been some question about third-party auditors and hiring contractors to do work such as that because of some of the conflicts of interest that those third-party auditors. So at this point, we would not be considering doing contractors.
Thank you. Representative Szymanski, follow-up. Representative McElfatrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question has been answered.
All right. Wonderful. We like that. Representative Anderson Bruce.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Swazinski, you said that these rules or this particular outline of the bill is going to go away when the feds come in with their guidelines, if they do come in this year, and this will kind of be a sunset type situation. I'm wondering, is the Department of Agriculture right now working with the federal government on guidelines, or as you're going to partner, I'm thinking we're going to take this on ourselves, we're going to go forward with this, but I would think that the feds would want to have some kind of input from you, being you're in charge of the state rather than, and that they would want to take some kind of information back from Dr. Katzenberg or yourself or others to allow maybe a smooth transition from this language into what they're going to come forward, because then it would be just, cats meow. Who would like to take that question?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Ms. Gauthier.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll start and then let Dr. Kassenberg fill in some of the details, too. So just to kind of to answer your question, the process going on here is that a year ago the feds passed this sweeping Food Modernization Safety Act that is basically changing their whole, the whole federal approach from addressing a contamination incident wherein people have become sick to preventing contamination incidents from occurring. And so it took the Food and Drug Administration a while to go through and redraft up some proposed rules based on that concept. Those rules were done at the end of November-ish, and then the rules went to the Office of Management and Budget at the federal level. And now, any day now, those proposed rules are going to come out. Then there's a 90-day comment period where Minnesota and any other state, any other individual, any other company, any other person can comment on those rules. And then the federal government will come back with final rules, hopefully, this summer or early fall. So, and so that's kind of the process that's going on here. As to whether we would have input, yes, we would have input at the proposed on the proposed rules. But Minnesota, unless I'm wrong, has had some very important impact on this, which is that this whole new process of looking at prevention, well, they got that idea from us. They are using the Minnesota food safety system as a model for going forward. So I think we're going to be in pretty good shape when these new rules come down. That's not to say that we won't have to do things differently, because we will. We don't know yet because we haven't seen the proposed rules, but I think it's an speaks well of Minnesota that the federal government looked to us and a couple other states too, but to us to model this new system so that other states can have systems similar to what we have here in Minnesota. And I'll let Dr. Kassenberg add what I might have forgotten.
Dr. Kassenberg, before I forgot to mention, members, when we do the bonding hearing, we are going to take a couple roll call votes on that, just to get it on record as far as our position on these bonding requests. So if any members walk out of the room, I know we have people are in some additional meetings, please let staff know where you're going, where we can find you. Thank you. Dr. Kassenberg.
Mr. Chair, Representative. As far as coordination between the state and federal level for this proposed language, we actually have Doug Luters, who's our program supervisor for our feed program here, is actually on a national committee, and he's a chair of the national committee looking at the model bill for all that FDA is also looking at as well for these rules at the federal level. So he's been working very closely with that, and he's had a big input as far as the state's language as well, to making sure that they are in sync. So there's a lot of coordination going on, and we're fortunate that Mr. Luters is on this national committee, because he's got a lot of insight as far as what the federal language probably will be.
Okay. Ms. Gauthier, do you have
And then in terms of the process, the seamless process, Mr. Chairman and Representative Anderson, we get rusty if you haven't done this for a while.
I'm rusty as well. Thank you.
You mentioned wanting to make sure there's a seamless kind of process. So adopting these rules by reference, as you'll look, if you look at page 5, line 27, that subdivision 15 there states that this system that's set up in the bill here, this temporary system, will end then when the Food and Drug Administration adopts their final rules on this issue. So by adopting by reference, that means that we at the department do not have to hold another comment period and another round of input and so forth to implement rules in Minnesota. It means we can pretty much take the federal rules and move forward with those. I hope that answers your question, Representative Anderson.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Ms. Gauthier, do you anticipate a cost differential between what we're looking at here in Minnesota versus what the federal may impose?
Ms. Gauthier.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Anderson, I think that's difficult without having seen the federal proposed rules that stem from the new federal Food Safety Modernization Act yet. Those rules are due out any day. Perhaps Dr. Kassenborg would like to add to that. It's difficult because we have not certified good manufacturing practices for non-medicated feed operations in Minnesota ever, and I mean in the past. So it's a new activity for us. So it's, without knowing what exactly the feds are going to require, it's hard to calculate what a cost differential. Sorry.
Dr. Kassenberg, anything to add?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative. We base the estimate of $1,200 on the medicated feed, which, and it's probably going to be similar as far as time for us to go into those facilities to do that. So we don't expect it to be, you know, by a factor of 10 or anything different. It should be fairly close because of the fact that we've been working with the feds on that model bill. So we estimate that it'll be very similar.
Thank you. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Will the FDA reimburse the Minnesota Department of Ag for enforcing these rules? Or regulations, inspections? Will there be any reimbursement?
I can answer.
Dr. Kassenborg, would you like to take that one?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative. They may or they may not. It depends upon the situation with their federal budget. There is precedent where we do get some funding from the federal government to conduct inspections for FDA. So it all depends upon what the federal government decides to do on that. But there is in cases we do that for food manufacturing facilities as well as feed manufacturing facilities where we get reimbursed for inspections. But for this particular case, I can't speak for the federal government.
Okay. Representative Anderson,
thank
you. Have a follow-up?
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Much like other people have asked questions, I guess, about, you know, certainly the Department of Ag and everything, I'm kind of concerned about the business side of it. Just to have a question about, I know that the test fire is talking about the industry, but also about a particular business. And I'm wondering about how many businesses there are in the state of Minnesota that perhaps would be included in this or want to be included in that. And then of those businesses, how many are multi-state businesses? So they're trying to attack it one by one, but I'm curious about that, if you have an idea.
Well, I'm going to let Matt answer that.
Kaczynski.
Mr. Chair, sorry, Chair Hamilton. Yeah. Rusty.
One more time, I'm calling security. I'm just teasing.
Representative Poppy, I know in our conversations when we were sitting down with the Minnesota Department of Ag, we at least singled out at least one other business that was going to be affected besides Ralco. And beyond that, maybe Matt, I know Matt sits on kind of the regional, the national state boards for this, so Matt can potentially.
Mr. Frederick.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I cannot give you a definite number of the organizations that could possibly be impacted or able to have this voluntary inspection take place. However, if you manufacture animal feeds or feed ingredients, you have the ability, if you so choose, to enter that export market and ask for this voluntary certification. I don't have the number for the number of those manufacturers that are in the state of Minnesota. It's substantial. I'm not positive of the actual number.
Ms. Gauthier.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Poppy, we don't know the number of companies that might seek this potentially type of certificate because we've never done this before and we don't know how many might be out there, but we have some similar programs for other types of feed and we're guessing maybe 12 a year, but again it could fluctuate because there's a global situation going on here. It's our understanding that there are other countries who are looking at this type of requirement too, most notably Mexico. Also, we don't have any control over whether these foreign countries decide that one certificate a year is enough. Maybe they'll change and decide they want two or whatever. So it's difficult. It was very difficult for us to figure out what the impact might be on our department because we've never done this before. But we're very happy to come forward and respond to a need in Minnesota and quickly get something put together that we think will satisfy the Brazilian government and allow Ralco and other companies who are out there to take advantage of the Brazilian market.
Representative Poppy?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have a kind of a follow-up, just because other people have talked about too, but just the lack of potential uniformity, you know, if the lack of ability to have a common certification process in every state that you talked about needing to go to. And I'm just wondering, again, from the business end, how much extra time and effort, the staffing and whatever you would expect to need to have to go to Iowa or Missouri or Kansas or wherever you may need to go in order to be able to get the certifications done at each state.
So, Ms. Gothier, we have a couple people testifying from the department. Do you think a lot of these questions would be answered during the testimony?
Mr. Chairman, thank you. We could bring other folks up here if you want to. I also think that it's important to remember that once the federal government does mm-hmm. issue their rules, then there'll be some pretty sweeping uniformity from the business aspect across the country. But mm-hmm. until then, the states that act quickly, hopefully like we are, will have a distinct competitive advantage.
Okay.
But I can certainly bring other people more with more expertise in the good manufacturing procedures and that sort of thing. If you want.
What we're going to do, Representative Poppy, you have a follow-up?
No, I'm not sure that it would be the department that would need to answer that. I was thinking more the industry person
okay.
would have the answer to that. So,
Mr. Fredrickson?
And it maybe isn't like necessarily that concerning. Obviously, we're in Minnesota and we're looking at what to do here, but I'm just curious if that's an added burden, again, to the business.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Fredrickson.
Representative, from an industry perspective, a lot of the language that is in this bill is built off of AFCO model bills and current good manufacturing practices, which is more information than the committee probably needs. However, with that, there is uniformity in that document among all 50 states. And so as we drafted or as the group drafted this language, we followed what's in there. To bring some uniformity, and then at the end of the process say there is a sunset clause that at the end of the process we will adopt the federal perspective. And so for an organization like ours and as an industry, if I go down into Kansas or Missouri, the inspection process is essentially the same as what's outlined in front of you. And so for us, it's one of those that we can take on that burden and are okay with the minimal amount of uniformity that we have currently until we get further uniformity among all.
Thank you, Mr.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Gothier.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think it might be helpful for the committee to hear from Dave Reed of our Dairy and Food Division, who has a lot more background on the AFCO or American Association of Food Control Officers. Mm-hmm. Model language.
Okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to take one more question from Representative Falk.
I can wait until.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Representative. Representative Paul Anderson, would you like to read the statement there as well, the position?
Yeah, certainly, Mr. Chairman. This comes from the Director of Ingredients and State Legislative Affairs from the American Feed Industry Association. It states, Chair Hamilton, we understand that the House Agriculture Committee is having a hearing today to consider changes to the commercial feed law that will allow for voluntary certifications of GMPs for feed and feed ingredients. The American Feed Industry Association is in support of this effort. The bill language that we've seen in the Senate file, corresponding file 1527, achieves an important priority for the industry to be able to facilitate exports that require GMP certification. We support this approach as long as language remains that the inspections will only be conducted upon request of the company and that these state-specific GMPs would expire upon publication of the final rules by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. So I think that sums up their position.
All right. Thank you. Mr. Frederick King, you have anything else to add from your testimony?
Mr. Chairman, I am fine if there are no further questions.
All right, thank you. Dr. Kassenborg, we have you up here. Would you like to add anything for your testimony that we haven't covered already?
Mr. Chair, no, I do not. Right.
That was Mr. Speaker twice. One more time, I'm calling security on you as well. All right? I'm just teasing. It was mentioned that Mr. Reed is here from the Department of Agriculture. Mr. Reed, would you like to make your way up here? We'll take your testimony as well.
Yes, absolutely.
And we will get copies to all the members. That was just came across via email. So we'll get members of that, or that copies of that to all the members as well, that Representative Anderson just read for us. Mr. Reed, please state your name, who you represent for the record, and proceed.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Dave Reed. The last name is R-E-A-D. I work for the Department of Agriculture in the Dairy and Food Inspection Division.
Welcome.
Thank you. I don't have a lot to offer at this point, Mr. Chair, because I think the letter that was read pretty well summarizes what we're looking at doing here.
Please, I'm going to ask you to speak closer to the mic. We're having difficulty hearing up here.
Sorry, Mr. Chair. One of the what we've done here to try, because I know I've heard some questions about uniformity from members, and what we're trying to do is we're using a model from the Association of American Feed Control Officials. It's an established organization of regulatory and industry folks. They've developed a model for GMP inspections, and that's the model that we have proposed that we adopt here as this temporary fix. We have issued in the past a number of certificates, but those have been for products only, not to inspect to a good manufacturing practices. So that's a difference here. That's what we're looking to have this authority. This is a different aspect of what we're being asked to do.
All right. Thank you. Any questions for the testifier specifically to his testimony? Seeing none, thank you so much. I'm going to call up Mr. Zelenka. Would you like to testify? You're on the list, my friend. Please state your name for the record, who you represent, and begin.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Bob Zelenka. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Grain and Feed Association. We represent the grain elevator and feed mill industry here in the state of Minnesota. I'll be brief. We've had a lot of conversation. We are in support of the bill. We have a couple of questions on a couple of things for the department, but speaking to the bill, we're in support of the bill. On the federal side, the Food Safety Modernization Act, which is a year old, the Office of Management and Budget has been delayed in looking at and reviewing the information, but they do have a deadline of July 3 for this regulation to be put in place. But it is a 200-page preamble, 100-page economic analysis, and the text of the regulations that OMB has been looking at, and it's been taking a while for them to get through all the work. I might add that the National Grain and Feed Association, another national group, has also been involved and supports this legislation because it is consistent with the AFCO language, model language that has been talked about previously, and the National Grain and Feed and AFIA have both been working very closely with FDA to come up with language that's consistent on a national level as well as from a state-to-state level. So with that consistency, hopefully that will address some of the concerns you had. From our standpoint, anytime you can improve the export opportunities for members of our association, we are in support. This was a barrier that was put up by Brazil. Other countries are looking at doing so. We have others, I can't say how many, but I was in Vietnam with FAMO Feeds just last month. They're looking at new market opportunities as a new thing for them to expand their business model. So, you know, how many are looking at it, don't know, but if you have and bring down these barriers, it does create some great opportunities for us. So appreciate the opportunity for being here.
Any questions for the testifiers? Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Zelenka, I listened to the letter that was read, and there was a reference to inspections. And it would seem that for a sound, valid certification program, an at-will inspection would be preferable to an on-call inspection. I mean, you could call me out, and I can sleep up pretty good before you, if I call you to come, versus having the inspector come at will to see the quality of the program. Does your association have a position on flexibility there?
We don't have a position on one, Mr. Chairman. We don't have a position one way or the other. Being presented voluntarily, we're certainly fine with that. We understand your question and your concern with that. But our facilities are inspected by the Department of Ag currently. We only have licensed facilities. So the management practices in feed mills are, in my opinion, pretty well up to snuff, if you will. So I don't anticipate any problem, whether it's voluntary or not, to be honest with you.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Zelenka, I've known you for a long time, and so you're not afraid of an at-will inspection then?
Not at all.
Mr. Zelenka.
Mr. Chairman, I would say, and I would say Matt as well, speaking for him as well, no, we would have no concern.
Mr. Frederickson.
Mr. Chairman.
Frederick King.
Representative. We have had at-will inspections in the last 12 to 24 months, so we are fine with at-will inspections. They occur currently. They will continue to occur. This would just be us inviting you back in for another inspection, okay, to go through the same, almost same process as what happens at the at-will.
So, Mr. Frederick King, our commissioner is Frederickson, so that's where I get tripped up once in a while, all right? I have a great deal of respect for the commissioner, and it just rolls off the tongue. So, any other questions for the testifiers? Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I don't mean to kick a dead horse here, but as we are discussing this, I'd like to have a clarification on what you exactly mean by voluntary. Now, I assume this is for an export market. So for those who want to export, this is a mandatory thing, or how would that work in terms of truly being voluntary?
We'd like to field this question.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Representative, the voluntary side of the equation comes on whether you are going after an export market. If you are in the domestic medicated feed markets, the MDA has full jurisdiction to come in currently and do inspections. And so this is just a voluntary process. If you want to export to that specific region of the world, then you can invite them in.
Representative Anderson, follow up. Any other questions for the testifiers or for the author? Representative Falk?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess a question I have for the Mr. Frederickson, just a little bit of process here. Take me through, when you get ingredients in, when you get materials in that go into a feed product, from the start date to the end date to when it's consumed, how long can that process last?
It's Frederickson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, it all depends on the product and the species that it is to be fed to and where the final customer is located.
Okay. Representative Falk?
Mr. Chairman, well, I mean, okay, so can you give me a shortest case scenario and longest case scenario?
So, depending on, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Representative, depending on the scenario, that ingredient could come into a facility and within 48 hours be consumed by an animal. Could happen as short as 12 hours, depending on which feed manufacturing facility you're in. From there, you could extend out that it may be a year to 2 years before that finished product is actually consumed by the animal.
All right. Representative Falk.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess that's my question, that because I'm looking through here with the inspection and labeling and sampling portions, and really the way that this is drafted, records only have to be kept for a year. And so if we find that something that causes adulterated feed to go into the feed supply chain, and full well knowing that some of these products can be in the supply chain for greater than a period of a year, how come we're only asking for 1 year worth of record keeping? Because I know that's not necessarily the norm in other similar supply chains.
Mr. Frederickson?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, currently the statutes and regulations are 1 year. When FSMA goes into full effect, it is a 2 year record requirement, which would put you under that window that I used as my example of products being consumed.
Representative Falk.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate that. I guess maybe that the question is then for Representative Szczesinski, if you're looking at amending this, because being that we know that a two-year window is going to become mandated by the feds pending some change, but likely be the case, why would we put in place procedures and documentation for a one-year process and then immediately have to redo it for a two-year process upon the federal rules going into implementation.
Representative Swazinski, do you want to field that or field that question?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to call up members from the department.
We get someone from the department to answer that question, please. Why the 1 year versus 2 years? Is that correct, Representative Falk?
Yes.
That's the question. Dr. Kassenborg.
Mr. Chair, Representative, once the federal rules go into place, then it will be the 2 years. And so we won't have to change anything because we will adopt those by reference. And so the right now, the 1 year is in the model bill that AFCO has been working on. And so that's what they went with this language. And so, but once they adopt those rules, then we will follow what the feds have.
Okay. Representative Falk, and members, we're going to spend about five more minutes on this bill.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess that's just, I mean, personal thing here, knowing that we're going to be at a 2 year, I just, you know, would have thought this would have been drafted to 2 years. I guess the other question I have for the author or the department would be, in reading about the, there are slight changes made to Section 2 here dealing with the adoption of rules, but just understanding process and timeline for public comment and rulemaking, how long do you foresee that to take, and then will this all be for naught? Because by the time we go through the rulemaking process, and I don't see anything drafted here for expedited rulemaking, will this all be spent money doing rulemaking, but then actually have to just adopt federal rules right immediately thereafter? I mean, I just want to understand how much of a timeline we're looking at.
Dr. Kassenborg, is this all for naught?
Mr. Chair, Representative, no, this is not all for naught. Well, we will not have to go through the rulemaking process if we pass this legislation as it is here, because we will adopt those rules by reference. We have precedent of that. We do that for other food rules that we adopt the federal rules by reference. So we will not have to go through that rulemaking process once the federal rules go into effect.
Representative Falk.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess that's why I'm just confused, because so you don't have to do any rulemaking to adopt the state standards prior to the federal standards going into effect, even though I know that you're going to have to adopt the federal standards by rule. But will you have to adopt state rules prior to the federal rules taking effect?
Dr. Kassenborg, you want to field that one?
Mr. Chair, Representative, somebody with a little more legal expertise, I think I will defer to
Ms. Gauthier. And Ms. Gauthier, we are actually going to be taking this bill up and voting on it on Tuesday. So if there's any questions that we do not have answers to, if we can provide those at that time as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, but I think I have an answer for Representative Falk.
Wonderful.
I think you're asking about the temporary program here that's going to issue these certificates. Will we have to do rulemaking for that? And the answer is no. Because basically the statute, if this passes, this bill passes into law and becomes statute, it's specific enough, it tells us exactly what we have to do. And the page 6 has several provisions on it about saying that we would not have to adopt the rules and we would not have to do public comments. So for what is in this bill. So if you look at 6.6 through 6.8, that is taking away the rule adoption and then the public comment. So we would not have to go through that process in setting up this temporary certificate process for companies like Ralco. However, when the new federal rules come down in July or whenever, and this bill, if passed as it is, would allow us to adopt those by reference. So again, we would not have to go through a full-fledged rulemaking process with comment period and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I hope that helps, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Falk, does that help?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I still have some questions about it, but I can deal with that offline. So, in the respective time.
Thank you so much. What we're going to do, like I said, this is informational only. I want to thank all the testifiers for coming forward to the committee. Ms. Gauthier and the members from the department, are you available for if we have any additional questions come Tuesday?
Mr. Chairman, absolutely.
All right. And the representatives from Minnesota businesses, I want to thank you for all that you do and traveling to St. Paul and offering up your testimony as well. Representative Swazinski, any final words?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think it's pretty straightforward as far as general support. It's they've talked to many industry folks from around the state that they're either in favor of this or at least neutral. And so I think we can continue this conversation on Tuesday. I appreciate the time to come before your committee, Mr. Chair.
Thank you so much. All right. Thank you, everybody. What we're going to do then, members, is we're going to roll into Governor Dayton's capital budget recommendations. The governor does have two recommendations that affect the Department of Ag, or as far as this committee, for bonding requests. And members, what I'd like to do is, just so that we get it on record, we're going to take the testimony, and I will be asking for a roll call on that as well. As the department's moving forward to offer up their testimony, Mr. Reinholtz, on the last bill for the testimony, I know Representative Swazinski asked for a fiscal note. Do you have any thoughts on that as far as when we'll be able to see that potentially?
Mr. Chairman, I did talk to the department, and this bill in this before the committee today is the same language as the Senate version. The Senate version has a fiscal note prepared, so as soon as this bill gets numbered, they would be able to generate a fiscal note almost immediately.
Thank you so much.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Morrow.
Before we start the bonding discussion, I have just a question about process, if I might.
Representative Morrow.
Thank you. I understand that plan to have a roll call vote on these two items. My question to you is, does the majority plan on presenting its own bonding proposals related to ag? And if so, what might be the timing and process on that? I'd like to get an idea. I think there'll be other ideas coming from you all that would help me understand what I might do today.
Yeah. I would like to know as far as some of those questions as well, the answers to some of those questions. What we're wanting to do is get it on record if we as a committee do support the governor's recommendations, and then we can move it forward to the bonding, the capital investments, or the other committees as well, and visit with the chairs on that. So that's why I'm just wanting to hear it today. Get it on record, and members are able to vote for, against, or not vote at all. I'll leave it up to them. Representative Morrow.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I'm okay with voting on these two. I just would note at the outset before we hear anything that while I might think one or both of these are good ideas, I might hear an even better idea from the majority when you all present a bonding bill. I think, well, gosh, I would have done that had I known. But right now, the only two proposals on the table are these two. And so I'm not objecting to your process. I'm just observing that it's really a limited question. What do we think on these two doesn't mean any thoughts on what you all might propose in later.
And Representative Morrow, I'm not going to make that decision for you. You're welcome to make it on your own. Thank you. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'm just wondering on a process here and what we're voting on, so I'm fully informed when I vote later. I don't see anything in a bill. I'm wondering if it's the strategic planning summary is what we're voting on, if this would be the motion and it would be to this. Is that
correct? Representative Hansen, again, we want to just have a position here as far as the committee on whether or not we as a committee support the governor's recommendations on these two different bonding proposals. Yes. Ms. Gauthier, would you like to testify or, to the testimony?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Ms. Gauthier, excuse me, Representative Fault.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, but I too have questions about process. I don't have my copy of Mason's with me, but we don't have a motion before us, so we cannot take action upon a motion. Would that not be out of order? Yeah.
I am told by staff it would not be out of order because it is just a recommendation and not a motion.
Well, don't we have to have a recommendation drafted then?
All right. I'm told we need recommendations from this committee to to draft the memo. If you don't want to vote, that's fine.
Well, I have no problem with the, but I mean, I just, I don't see that this is on the agenda, nor, I mean, there's here, but how would the public know that there's going to be a vote taken on this? I mean, there's no indication of it. So just from a process standpoint, I have some concerns about this. We're setting an interesting precedent.
Okay. Well, to that point, members, what we're wanting to do, talking with the department, hearing the governor's requests as far as the proposals, we're simply wanting to air this in the Ag Committee and say, yes, we either support these or not. And I think the department would, and I'll let them speak on their behalf, to the department. Do you want us to support your recommendations? Would it be helpful in any way, shape, or form?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think that the recommendations that come before you today are the recommendations of our department, and of course we would like to have the support of the committee, but the process for doing that is the committee's, is of course at your discretion, Mr. Chairman, and that of the committee.
Well, you know what, I really like to have peace in the valley, and so we will hear the testimony. And if there's any objection for us to make a recommendation that we agree with what it is that you brought forward, let's get that on record. If there is not, we'll get that on record as well. And we'll make a decision on whether or not we want to vote after the testimony. To your testimony, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Unfortunately, we are running into a couple of technical difficulties here in our ability to get a presentation up on the screen here today. Oh, there we go. We have two parts today. We were asked by staff and the chairman, because many of the members of the committee are new to the legislature or to this policy area, to just give a very brief background on the Rural Finance Authority and what it is, how it functions, because one of our recommendations, or one of our requests rather, in the governor's budget is for an appropriate bonding for the Rural Finance Authority. So I'm going to turn to Deputy Commissioner Jim Borboom, who oversees the Rural Finance Authority, and for several years did head that program up. There we go. If that is indeed still something that the committee would like to have, Mr. Chairman.
Please, yes, proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Please state your name, who you represent for the record.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Jim Borboom, Deputy Commissioner with the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. It's great to be here.
And Deputy Commissioner, the Commissioner was in my office this morning, and he told me that we as a committee are supposed to go very easy on you because of a procedure that just took place, something about your heart. So we're going to be kind.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I always appreciate the courtesy that you show me as well as the committee members. I do have about a 10-minute brief presentation, an overview of the Minnesota Rural Finance Authority. I appreciate your consideration of the governor's request for some bond authorization to continue the loan programs authorized by the Minnesota Rural Finance Authority. So my goal today is just to introduce you to the loan programs that we administer, a little bit about who we partner with in administering those loan programs, as well as some of the experience that we've had with those loans. So the mission and the structure of the Rural Finance Authority, we and the program details as well as the repayment. So that's what I'm just going to cover as far as the brief agenda. The Minnesota Rural Finance Authority, we are our mission is to provide eligible Minnesota farmers affordable financing under terms and conditions not available from other credit sources. The Rural Finance Authority was established by the 1986 legislature. It was established during a time when there was some severe financial adversity among many of the farmers in rural areas of the greater state of Minnesota. And this was a mechanism to help lenders and borrowers restructure some loans back in the 80s that were completely would not cash flow and were largely undersecured. We have a unique provision in the state constitution under Article 11, Section 5, that allows the use of state bonds. And the state bonds are, again, the authorization is to develop the state's agricultural resources. That authorization includes the ability to extend credit on real estate security. So this is a very unique provision within our Constitution, and it's because of this provision that we're able to offer the loan programs administered by the Rural Finance Authority. The RFA is governed by an 11-member board. There are six public members, as well as the state auditor, and then four commissioners. The Commissioner of Agriculture is the chair. The other commissioners are from Commerce, Deed, and MMB. There are five loan programs that are funded from the sale of general obligation bonds. We offer other loan programs. Some of the other programs that we offer are funded by federal funds. Another group of loans are funded from a general fund. But this is, again, a unique program, again, that is funded from the sale of general obligation bonds. Those five loan programs are the basic and seller assisted, the Ag Improvement Loan Program, the Livestock Expansion Program, as well as the Restructure 2. Just a little bit about the type of audience that we're looking at in the basic and seller assisted loan program. These are targeted toward beginning and entry-level farmers that wish to buy real estate, whether it's a building site or an 80-acre parcel or something from a relative or friend. The program may be used more than once by a borrower. We can actually carry up to $300,000 within the RFA program. And so if a borrower comes in and buys a building site and later on wants to add another 80-acre parcel, they're able to do that later on. One of the conditions or requirements of the participants in this program is that they enroll in a farm management program, and this is a three-year requirement. We strongly support this requirement, and we think it's a very essential part for beginning farmers to understand their financial position. The Agriculture Improvement Loan Program is targeted primarily toward the same group of farmers, but it's for those people that are in the farm business and want to upgrade their facility. Maybe they need to upgrade a grain handling facility or machine storage facility, manure handling or livestock systems. So it's again targeted toward producers who are essentially entry level but want to make some of those capital improvements that are part of a farming operation. The Restructure Loan Program, that was the first program authorized by the legislature back in 1986, and again is to help farmers reorganize the debt to improve cash flow. Only debt of an agricultural nature is eligible for the refinancing. And this is if you have a borrower that where the top half of the balance sheet is completely messed up, if they have open accounts or unpaid bills, or you know, just sometimes you have a medical situation or an illness in the family and all of a sudden things turn upside down, or you have a drought or a tornado or a flood. Whatever the condition is, and you need to refinance, this can be done through the Restructure Loan Program. It does require that the borrower has equity in their real estate. And so as a lender, I was never really excited about doing this, but you could do this maybe once and then move on. And then finally, the fifth program is our Livestock Expansion Loan. This is creates financing for state-of-the-art production facilities. These have largely gone toward hog production facilities as well as for dairy production facilities. And these are for some very modern, up-to-date facilities. These are targeted toward farmers that have a net worth of $783,000 or more. And again, the loan participation is at a higher level at $400,000 versus $300,000. We partner with about 400 plus, probably about 420 lenders throughout the state of Minnesota that handle most of the paperwork. And we buy, again, the RFA buys 45% of a qualifying loan. And the borrower really, when it comes to the impact for the borrower, they really don't see us. We're a silent partner and an invisible partner. The borrower pays the lender and the lender pays us. The application process, I'll just show that to you. Essentially, a customer walks in the bank or an ag lender, farm credit service office, whatever it is, fills out an application with the borrower or with the loan officer at that facility. That individual then in turn submits an application to our office. We require the same supporting documentation that the bank or the farm credit service office would ask. And that's typically a balance sheet or a financial statement, 3 years of tax returns and some cash flows. All that information comes to our office. The RFA processes and approves the loan sends a letter back to the ag lender, said, yes, we're willing to buy 45% because it meets our credit standards and it meets the eligibility requirements. The lender goes ahead and closes a loan. Once a loan is closed, they let us know that they've set a closing date. And then after that is done and the lender sends us evidence that they have a security interest in that loan, the loan is closed and that they have, you know, perfected security interest, then we buy it. So we make sure that we have all the paperwork is fully completed. You know, the benefit, quite honestly, of this loan program is not only that it provides a lower cost of financing for farmers, but it helps a lot of our lenders manage credit risk, especially for beginning and entry-level farmers. And some smaller independent banks or community banks are subject to lending limits. The portion that they sell to us is not subject to that, so there's a benefit as well. The programs are fairly easy to understand. We've had great staff that worked with us over the years, and currently our senior loan officer that handles this program is Ryan Rollis, and so if any of you or any lenders call, you know, you'd be happy to probably contact him. The last slide I'd like to close with is the fact that we are asking for authorization to sell bonds, and we work with the Department of Minnesota Management and Budget, sells bonds on our behalf. The sale of the bonds, or the cash, I should say, from the sale of those bond proceeds are used again to buy the loan participations, the principal and interest receipts that the lender remits back to our office then go into a dedicated account to repay the debt service on the bonds. So the bottom line is that these bonds are user financed. This is not a revolving loan account. We're going to continue to come back, and we've done this for, you know, about every 3 years or every 2 years. We come back to the legislature, ask for bond authorization so we can continue to offer these loan programs. I'm very pleased with the credit quality over the 25 years this program's been in place. You can see we've issued over 2,600 loans for a total of $178 million. We've actually only had 17 loans out of that time frame that we've had loan losses of $280,000. That's way beyond what industry expectations or industry standards are. It's a credit to the people that, whether it's our independent community banks or our system banks or farm credit service offices, they're doing they know their borrowers, they're doing their homework, and they're sending us high quality credit. And even though I have to say about two-thirds or 65% of our loan activity is targeted toward beginning and entry-level farmers, which you would think is the highest risk. But again, these are family operations. They know they're second and third generation farmers, and so we're very fortunate to have a good working relationship with those lenders, and it shows again in the loan performance that we have. So I'll be happy to answer any questions. Again, thanks for the option to be here.
Thank you. Members, any questions for the testifier? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On this piece here, it talks about the project would continue regular funding of the loan programs of the Rural Finance Authority. Is there a sunset clause in statute that says this is going away and we have to renew this to make it available?
Deputy Commissioner.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Representative Anderson, there is no sunset clause. I think that it's the business practice that we've been, again, come to the legislature about every 2 years or 3 years with a request for bond authorization, so that is an opportunity to revisit the program and determine does it value or does it have value, and does it continue to be opportunity to revisit the program and determine does it value or does it have value, and does it continue to be, you know, is there a merit in continuing the program? But there's no sunset clause.
So, Mr. Chair.
Representative Anderson.
So, Mr. Bilbrum, if there is no money that's set aside for this fund, it just is in limbo? Is that what you're saying?
Mr. Chairman, Deputy Representative Anderson, ultimately we would run out of funds. Steve Ernest is with me, and Steve is actually the director of our Budget and Finance Division, and the Rural Finance Authority is now under his administrative oversight. He's got the financial information. At the present time, we have about $10 million in unused authorization from the 2009 legislation. and we have some cash on hand of about $8 to $9 million. So, you know, we do have cash available. We do have unused authorization, but that is not enough money to get through another calendar year or another fiscal year. It's been our practice, too, to make sure that we have 1 year in reserve so we don't get caught not having sufficient funds.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Borboom, for being with us today. I believe you mentioned in your remarks that there is a loan limit of $300,000. Given the dramatic increases in values of farm assets, is there some consideration given to raising that limit?
Deputy Commissioner.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Representative Torkelson, I can give you some information. The legislature has authority to change those lending limits or the participation. Again, that represents the 45% that we would carry. So you have to look at the other 55% that the lender might have. It's something that the legislature could adjust. With respect to the net worth, there are two eligibility requirements that we look at. One is the level of net worth, and the other one, again, the maximum loan amount. And the net worth for the restructuring of livestock expansion is currently at $783,000. That is adjusted by the Consumer Price Index, so there will be a slight increase. We're going to do that February 1st. But the $400,000 participation, that is set by the legislature. And we at the present time do not have an initiative to increase that.
Representative Torkelson? Any other questions? Ms. Gathier.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So with that overview of the Rural Finance Authority, then I would direct members to our two requests this year for bonding. And one is $33 million for the Rural Finance Authority. As Deputy Borboom just discussed, every couple of years, so this is a procedure of coming before the legislature and estimating what we think the need is going to be for the coming period of time and giving you that number. So this is our estimate of what we think will be sufficient to meet whatever demand may arise. And then I will talk about our second item, and then I would stand for questions. Our second item is $706,000 for it's a joint request with the Department of Health. And as you know, we share laboratories with the Department of Health. And this is a joint proposal to get a more complete emergency power system for our shared lab buildings. The need that would be addressed by this project was identified in an engineering study that was commissioned by the Department of Administration after our agencies moved into the building. So essentially, the technicalities are in a documentation that you may have or that is available online. But essentially, there is a shared area of our labs. There's the Department of Ag part and the Department of Health, where our scientists have their offices and their separate laboratories for doing their work. The equipment, the big price equipment, we share. Each of those sites has a power backup. But those power backups are not connected, and there is no way to bring in an outside power source. So what this would do is connect the two backup systems, ours and Health, and then allow for us to bring in, should we ever need it in an emergency, generator of some kind from the outside, plug it in to those connected labs. So we just feel, from a standpoint of emergency preparedness, as you know, our department is constantly training and getting prepared for the event of a animal disease outbreak or some such problem. And we feel that we really would like to have these emergency backup systems brought up to the level at which we will for sure have them in our capacity to use in the event of an emergency.
Representative Schmansky.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Ms. Gauthier, in this discussion, does this include the power generator itself in the cost of this proposal, or are we just talking about the infrastructure to permit the hookup of a power generator? So, in essence, we will not have an uninterrupted power supply in place at that if this proposal goes forward. Is that correct?
Scott.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Schmansky, this proposal does not include purchase of a generator. It links the two backup systems of each agency and then allows a port coming in from outside the building should we need to bring on additional power generation in the event of an emergency.
Representative Schmansky.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. An extended question on that. Does this equipment then become, or is this equipment of the agencies, or is it an upgrade to the building structure itself that we're talking about here?
Scott here, or Deputy Commissioner?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Szymanski, actually the mechanism, the switches or the electrical wiring essentially that connects the two systems, that's part of the building or that's part of the fixtures within the building. Again, we're not buying any generators, although we would have capacity to bring in a mobile unit and simply plug that in. So to answer your question, that would be part of the infrastructure within the building, much like if you're looking at it in a dairy barn, you have the parlor as part of the capital structure of the building. So that's the way this would roll out.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Representative Schmansky. Representative Anderson, Bruce.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Gauthier, you mentioned this is a joint proposal, and you're asking for $706,000. What's being asked of the Health Department of the HHS Committee as far as finances? Is it equal amount of money, or are we talking?
Deputy Commissioner?
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, Representative Anderson, actually, this is no different. I mean, that's the 700 and whatever the amount is.
Six.
700. The amount of money is for both health and ag. There's no other money that health is asking. So this is the two agencies asking for the same amount of money.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It mentions here that there was a engineering study commissioned by the Department of Administration. And I'm wondering what it says here, needs to address the projects with an S behind it. And I'm wondering what the projects were and what the study says.
Deputy Commissioner.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, good question. I can get you a copy of that study. I believe it was done about 3 years ago. Actually, I believe when the building was constructed or during the construction phase of the building in 2003 and 2004, this may have gotten engineered out. So, it again, after the building was completed, then Department of Administration said that this is something that should be in place. So it's a study that was done about 3 years ago. I believe the dollar amount, though, to be transparent, may be something less than the $700,000, but our business manager has said that we need to make some adjustments for added costs or inflation, whatever, from, 3 years ago when the study was done. So if you look at the study, it may have a slightly lower number.
Representative Anders.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Birbum, it says it says this is to provide a more complete emergency power system. I take it you have an emergency power system already in both the Department of Ag and the Department of Health. What is it that needs to be more complete than what you already have?
Deputy Commissioner.
We do, Mr. Chairman, Representative Anderson, we do have an emergency system both in the laboratory facility, and we also have an emergency system in the office building. What we don't have is ability to, if one goes down, we don't have ability to use the system. Let's say the lab generator goes down, and we don't have capacity to continue operating the lab at the present time. If the lab generator goes down, we don't have capacity to continue operating that lab. So what this does is allows us to link into the power system at the office building or else bring in a mobile unit.
Representative Anderson?
Thank you.
Representative Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You know, we talk a lot around here about shared services and reform and redesign, and those topics come up frequently. Even at One Minnesota conference yesterday, the Beltrami County Administrator was interested in a lot of his presentation, but one of the things that it said was that, you know, reform and redesign, you know, that's not necessarily a budget item. It's not necessarily a budget line item. But what it is, and what it should be, and what it can be, is to, you know, make sure that we do processes that are make our process more effective, efficient in the operation. And so this sounds like a effective, efficient operation to me in a shared service model. And so it's very interesting. I think that you're being forward thinking in, you know, what would happen in an emergency situation. My question would be, has it already happened? Have we lost power? And has there not? Have we not been able to, do the functions that we need to do in order to take care of the business?
Very important question, Deputy Commissioner.
Mr. Chairman, great question. I can say that we have not lost power. We have not had that experience. During the construction of the light rail, there was a few moments of interruption. I know that that has occurred, but to say that we've had a sustained loss of power, no.
Representative Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just, again, in an emergency situation, I think that's the forward thinking here. I think that's what we all need to keep in mind, is in an emergency situation, if we have a critical epidemic outbreak of some sort that is going to rely on those labs, both of those labs working together and being functional and operational, you know, I just want us to keep that in mind, that that's what really reform and redesign and shared services really should be, quite frankly. And so I applaud you bringing this forward in forward thinking. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Ward. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do you anticipate or do you have any capital expenses for the building related to the construction of the rail?
Deputy Commissioner.
No, Mr. Chairman, Representative Hansen, no, we do not anticipate any building modifications or any added cost. We've been very pleased with communications that we've received from both the City of St. Paul and our, you know, the construction firms that are doing that work, and it's on schedule, it's on time, and again, I think it's so far it's been a good experience, but no, we're not anticipating any building modifications.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you. And if you had the staff capacity to do eDNA testing for invasive carp, are there any capital needs that the department would need in your laboratory to facilitate doing that testing here rather than contracting it out of state?
Deputy Commissioner.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hansen, I do anticipate that we would need some equipment to handle that kind of work. I'd have to ask Ms. Gauthier to answer the dollar amount, because I know she's talked to our lab director about what that might cost.
Ms. Gauthier.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Hansen, my understanding, we have an incomplete estimate at this time, but there was at least one item of machinery that was about $90,000 and a couple others around $15,000, and there would definitely be some, if there was to be eDNA testing related to invasive species, without knowing what, you know, exactly the frequency and the amount, but there would be, we would need certain test kits, reagents, some supplies. We would need, and I can get that for you. I'm sorry, I don't have those numbers with me today.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And would that equipment be bondable, or would it be on a cash need?
Deputy Commissioner.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hansen, my quick thought is that probably is not eligible for bonds, because it's, I would say it's a tangible piece of equipment. You can pick it up and move it, and it's not an infrastructure or building, so...
Representative Hansen, follow-up. Representative Anderson.
Thank
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I must admit I'm not an electrician, but this just sounds expensive to me for what we're getting. And I just want to clarify, is there a backup system in place now to operate the labs, which to me would be the key thing to keep going in an emergency?
Deputy Commissioner?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Representative Anderson, yes, there is a backup system in place right now to operate the lab, and we do have a backup generator, and it has capacity to fully operate, maybe not fully operate, but at least to operate both the health and ag lab. Again, we share the same building, but what this proposal does is essentially it's like a big extension cord, if you want to put a visual image to it, so that we could plug in either to a mobile unit from outside or plug in to the generator from our office building. So in the event that the generator in the lab went down, right now we don't have capacity to continue operating that.
Thank you. Representative Anderson, follow-up.
Well, just thanks, Mr. Chair. So this is kind of like a backup to a backup then.
Yeah. They're shaking their head, yes.
Yes.
It can never be too safe, right? Any other questions or comments? Representative Falk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess just wanted to get a little bit of clarification about the RFA, and apologies if I missed it, but what is the duration on these bonds that we are seeking to let?
Deputy Commissioner.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, Representative Falk, what we're asking the legislature to do is just simply give us authorization to sell the bonds. We sell the bonds whenever we have loan demand that would prompt the need to sell. The bond sales that we've sold are usually about a 5-year or a 7-year maturity, something along those lines. We purposely have the maturity of the bonds slightly shorter than the terms of the loans. The loan participations are a 10-year term, and they can be amortized up to 20 years or 30 years, but at the end of 10 years we have a balloon payment. So essentially, once we buy, or the RFA buys the loan participation, there's an amortization schedule that shows a quarterly or a annual payment, and that goes into this dedicated account to repay the debt service on the bonds. So the board, essentially the board of the Rural Finance Authority, will pass a resolution asking Minnesota Management and Budget to have a bond sale or to hold a bond sale and do that on our behalf, and then the staff or myself and Steve Ernest set the terms or the time frame of that bond, and again, the maturities are usually about 5 years.
Representative Falk, follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate that clarification. I guess just in the macro sense, looking at the economic conditions we have and the historically low rates going out in terms fixed as far as 30 years out, are you locked into that structure, or would it not make sense to maybe think a little bit more creativity that maybe taking advantage of some 30-year sales fixed at, you know, using the state's capacity at about 3% would be a great way to lock in rates? And I think most financial institutions are doing this, so we should maybe take a key from them.
Deputy Commissioner.
Yeah, your point is well taken, Mr. Chairman and Representative Falk. And I agree that the challenge is once we sell a bond, then the we are obligated to pay 18 months of interest right up front, and then we pay annual interest thereafter each year. So there's a cost, even though I would acknowledge and agree that we have historically low interest rates, there's a cost to just sitting on cash, because once we're sitting on cash, and if that cash is not sold for purchasing loan participations, we're not realizing any interest income on it. But on the other hand, we've got an obligation to pay the interest on the debt service on the bond. So it's, your point is a good one, but we're caught between, we have an obligation to pay the debt service on the bonds, and the only way we do that is by making the loan participations. If we're sitting on cash and not able to realize interest income on the loan participations, then it doesn't work.
Excuse me, Representative Falk, I'll let you do a follow-up, but I want to offer up a little bit of clarification. From Chair Howes, he said, temporary House Rule 412 requires the Speaker to assign proposed bonding projects to the appropriate finance committees. The Finance Committee is then required to make recommendations to the Capital Investment Committee on those projects. He goes on to say that we can either offer up a separate bill and take a vote on that, or just do a simple vote, voice vote or whatever, on the recommendations. If you don't want to make a recommendation, that's fine. And I know there's been a little bit of confusion, a little bit of concern, and whether it's the process or the actual governor recommendations themselves. If the minority party would not like to make a recommendation, I will say, okay, we won't do it, and we'll ask the governor and his staff to move this forward himself. If you'd like more time, we'll try to work this in at a later date as well, if that would be your recommendation. So I want to work with you the best that I possibly can.
And Mr. Chair.
Representative Eakin.
Thank you for that. I appreciate your willingness to work with us, and we will, we are willing to take a vote today on the recommendations. The only concern was with the suddenness of it. I know this is a compressed schedule this session too, so obviously things are going to be moving along faster, but there's been no, you know, there's no bill before us, and there's no official proposal right here. And I think some of the concern was with taking votes on something before they've been adequately vetted and thoroughly looked at. Certainly, you know, one concern might be with the Rural Finance Authority as far as whether the recommended amount is sufficient to meet or adequate for the needs that are out there. And that's a little bit harder to determine than an emergency power supply system, for instance, as far as how you measure need and how do you come to that conclusion. And maybe you could respond to that as well, and you may have covered some of that previous testimony. I didn't catch all the previous testimony. If you want to address that issue, that would be good before we move on.
Thank you, Representative Eakin. And we will be moving on in 4 minutes. So, Deputy Commissioner, one way or the other.
Yep. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Representative Eakin. Great question. Now, do we have sufficient funds? Our forecast right now is that we have sufficient funds to get us through fiscal year 14-15, actually. The average loan activity per year is about $10 to $11 million. We are currently sitting on about we've got $13 million in cash with $5 million in loan commitments that have not closed. So the net out of that is $8 million unused cash. Added to that, we have $10 million in unused bond authorization from 2009. So we've got essentially $18 million there. And then the $33 million, again, would get us through, again, fiscal year 14-15. So in the event something completely blows up, and I'm not anticipating that, we could always come back in and ask for a bond authorization during a budget cycle. And we actually did that in 2009 because it does not require the two-thirds vote, and the bonds are user financed, so it makes it easier for us to come back.
Thank you, Deputy Commissioner. 3 minutes, Representative Eakin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I would like to move the governor's bonding recommendation on both the Rural Finance Authority and the Emergency Power Supply for the Minnesota Department of Agriculture and Health Labs. For the $33 million for the Rural Finance Authority, the $706,000 for the Emergency Power Supply, and that these recommendations be forwarded to the Capital Investment Committee.
Thank you, Representative Eakin. Just for the record, I will withdraw the statement that I said about a roll call vote. Representative Eakin, I'd like to take these one at a time. Representative Eakin makes a motion to approve the governor's recommendation on the Rural Finance Authority loans. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Representative Eakin makes a motion to approve the governor's recommendation on the emergency power supply. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Any other business? Thank you to the testifiers. Thank you so much. Any other business?
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Fault.
Thank you. I think I still have the floor here, which is okay.
Representative Fault.
I was going to ask Mr. Borboom, I know we're shutting down, but I do have some other questions about the RFA. I think we should, if we have additional time, maybe dedicate to this, because if the terms are such where we have to pay 18 months worth of interest up front to whoever is our, whether it's our bonding house or whoever it is that's putting together some of these financing terms, I think we should be, as a state, looking over these terms if we have to do some things statutorily, because I think we deserve, and the taxpayers deserve, a much better, much more favorable terms in line with what is happening in the financial markets that reflect the conditions today versus what they were perhaps 10 years ago, 5 years ago. And that just seems like that's a bit egregious, that if we're going having to let bonds to put 18 months worth of, was it 18 months worth of interest up front? I think we should have a much more lengthy discussion about this.
Thank you, Representative Falk. It's on record. Deputy Commissioner, you have the final word.
Well, again, thank you for the privilege to be here, and I'm happy to visit with you, Mr. Chairman, or any of the members about how we handle the sale, the bond sales, and what our obligation is. So I'd be happy to do that.
All right. Thank you. Meeting adjourned.